So you're the author of a blog called Urban Science Adventures. Can you tell me a little about that?
I started it in 2006. It is basically a blog that catalogs and uses pictures in my narratives of science that you can see right outside your back door. So I focus on urban ecology and all those different ways to access environmental science and conservation and biology, but through accessible, you know, wildlife watching in your neighborhood parks or backyard.
Is it hard to come up with urban science topics to write about?
I mean, sometimes I do have a hard time, but for the most part, I use a lot of conversations that I have with people. It is not uncommon for me to get random text messages from people asking me, what is this? Literally 2 weeks ago, I got a picture mail from someone asking me to identify an animal based on a scat sample, this big pile of poop. And I was like, are those berries? And they're like, I think so. I said, well, take the picture again next to a ruler or something for scale. You know, and I was like, oh, and by the way, who is this? And so my friend texts me back. He was like, you just answer random questions about poop without knowing who it is? I was like, this is sad, but I get these texts a lot. And so, you know, so he put his shoe up next to it for scale. So he was a trooper. He went along with it. And I looked at it and I was like, I would say it's raccoon with all those berries. And then he said where it was, like on top of his trash can. I'm like, yeah, I would say it's a raccoon, because what else it could be would be a possum, and possum poop just doesn't look like that.
So it's a little like being a detective.
It is a lot like being a detective. I tell people that all the time. It's exactly what science is. It's like you get to answer all your own questions and figure things out. Yeah.
Recently, you've started a similar blog for Scientific American.
Yes. So Scientific American started their own blogging network, and I was invited to join it. And as a result of that, I created a new blog that's based on two of my previous blogs, which is Urban Science Adventures, which is about urban ecology, and my other blog, which is Southern Playalistic Evolution Music.
What's that?
It is a blog about evolutionary biology where everything's explained with rap songs. I call it evolutionary science remixed with fat beats. And so one of my examples was I was hearing a talk about, I think it was some sort of fly, and males give females nuptial gifts. That's where males present a spermatophore, which is a nutritious kind of nutrition packet, and sometimes the females eat it, sometimes they insert it vaginally. But the thinking was that that nutrition was for the eggs and for the babies. Well, this researcher did isotope isolation, so he was able to look at the isotopes of the spermatophore, and then he can see where she metabolized it. Did it go into egg production, or did it go into her own metabolism? And sure enough, she used it for her own metabolism. And the second I heard that, because I was listening to the researcher present it, and at the time, as he said that, I went, she was supposed to buy you shorty Tyco with your money. She went to the doctor and got lipo with your money, which is based on a song by Kanye West, Gold Digger. She was supposed to buy you shorty Tyco with your money. She went to the doctor and got lipo with your money. And it's perfect because, you know, in the whole system of nuptial gifts, you know, females are looking for males with the, you know, most assets to provide for them. And she may not be a gold digger, but who really wants a broke man in the meantime, you know? So now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. It does play into these evolutionary principles, and I started thinking a lot of rap songs are about dating and mating, which all play into sexual selection. And so I use rap songs to explain scientific principles, including EPCs, extra pair copulation. You don't know what that is? Extra pair copulation is when a couple, the male or female, one or both of them might step out on their relationship for copulations outside. Sometimes they have babies and sometimes they don't, but it's really, really common in birds. You know, we always thought birds were like the hallmark monogamous species in the animal kingdom. Starting in the late 80s, once we learned about the genetic techniques and we could start actually doing, you know, genetic testing, we found out that it was all types of hanky-panky going on out there. And so extra pair copulations, I thought, was a really good principle to explain with Naughty by Nature song, you know, with OPP.
Just in case some people haven't heard that song, how does it go?
You down with OPP, yeah, you know me. And then he goes to explain, he's like, OPP for the ladies means basically you're cheating on your boyfriend with another man, and so other people's property. And for men, is you're cheating on your girlfriend with, you know, her best friend or some other nearby female. So And as I listened to the song, I thought, that's really it. You know, that is the answer to EPC. If you didn't understand what EPCs were, that song is a complete and thorough explanation of OPP. You know, of EPC. So, you down with EPCs? Yeah, you know me.
You're an African-American woman. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that part of your identity influences your work as a scientist and as a science blogger?
Absolutely. And I specifically blog for the underrepresented. I mean, and I write a lot of things. Every now and then I will get personal, and which means I deal with some political issues or some socioeconomic issues that I think relate to my audience. And I'm very upfront when I talk to people in person or on my blog. Science outreach is successful when we recognize that we market best to people who are like us, because those are audiences that you comprehend. So I'm really good at recognizing those barriers to entry in science, not just African-Americans, but inner city families where, though you may be encouraged to go to school, but you're not given a lot of direction as to how to pursue particular careers, particularly in science and engineering. I mean, we're underrepresented for a reason, because too few of us, you know, go into these fields and we stick it out. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that there aren't a lot of role models. There are a lot of barriers, but one I've seen a lot is the unconscious and not deliberate influences by adults who themselves are averse to science. So little simple things like being preoccupied with the child being clean all the time or sitting still. And I think, regrettably, sometimes children are dissuaded from, you know, from being creative, from coming up with alternative answers. I think that's the other thing that discourages a lot of children from science, is that we are teaching them in a way that they must arrive at a right answer, but we don't explain to them what makes an answer right. And so that means there's only one magical answer. Too few of them are encouraged to just think outside the box and to be creative and find alternative solutions, which are all the essential soft skills for doing well in science and engineering.
You obviously love science.
I do.
So how did you get to love science so much?
It's interesting because I did not do well in science all through grade school and high school. I did okay. In college, I did okay. But I was always good at hands-on stuff. So I really say the reason why I managed to make it into science is because I had a really good experiential education. My undergraduate degree is in animal science, which is agriculture. And I did well in those classes. I did great. Even though, you know, I didn't grow up on a farm, I was completely green. I had no idea what was going on from the first day of class. But I was always an assertive student. So when I did have a question, I would raise my hands and stay after it until I understood. We were at the farm literally 3 or 4 days a week, so I was able to not just learn things in abstract, but I was learning them, you know, in a very concrete way. And then fortunately, I went on to graduate school. Didn't intend to go on to graduate school. I was trying to become a veterinarian, and that didn't work out, which was the biggest blessing in disguise ever, because I was always interested in animal behavior. Throughout all my classes, my biggest question was always, well, why do animals do such and such? I think I learned like my senior year that you could just study animal behavior. I'm like, really? I don't want to waste my time doing this other stuff. I just want to study what animals do. Like, I get paid to do that? That's awesome. Yeah. So, yeah, I have a ball doing it. I enjoy it. And it's definitely nothing I learned about in Career Day ever. Like, no one ever explained to me how being in science on the basic side or the bench research side or even the outreach side was even a career opportunity. And so that's why I do my outreach, to let folks see, one, a different face of science and to see different avenues into science.
What do you see yourself ultimately doing as a career?
Oh, I can go in a million different directions. If I take the traditional route, which is academia, I will teach and research, of course. I'm really good at helping people find their on-ramp to science, and I enjoy that. And I think that has to do with my personal interest in working with what I call the least likely candidate students, because I myself was a least likely candidate student. So I'm patient with helping them comprehend, you know, the tools that they need to do well, and then get them ready to go on to pursue science at a deeper level. I see outreach as a part of what I do daily. My golden ticket, if I were able to do that, I would love to have my own science show. Yeah, that would be my golden ticket, is to do it on television. Yeah.